Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Zone, and I am your host, Veronica Monet. Joining me tonight is Alina Gabash, who's the Executive Director of the Center for Sex. I always get this wrong. Is it Sex Positive Culture?
Center for Sex Positive Culture. That's exactly right.
I get real afraid to say that name because there's like a real similar name down in San Francisco, and I'm always afraid I'm going to get them both confused.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a similarity. I mean, there's a lot of similarity, actually, between us, so it
yeah.
makes sense.
Well, and I'm presenting there on the 23rd of October, so.
Awesome.
Same thing I did up there at what we used to call the wet spot. Anyway, for our listeners, this episode is called Kinky Cousins Part 2, and Alina Gabash happens to be Veronica Monet's cousin. First cousin. And we thought that the rest of our cousins were going to be joining us. Maybe they will. Maybe they're feeling shy and they're just going to Twitter and Facebook things. But I'll keep watching my wall and see if something pops up. If any of you cousins are out there and you want to join us, we can still talk about sex and religion and abusive families. But I think right now Alina and I are actually kind of in the mood to talk about how sex can save the world. Is that right, Alina?
That's my favorite topic. I'm actually on a crusade right now to change how the world looks at sexuality, and I'm doing it here in Seattle, and I believe that we will start doing it elsewhere if things work out right. So,
can you tell the listeners a little bit about? I mean, you know, it's a bit broad topic. How can sex save the world? But more specifically, before we go into that big topic, what are you doing to save the world through sex?
Besides being
a total slut.
You don't even know the half of it. This morning, I had the nicest time here in my office. So, but that's another whole story. We'll talk about that.
Maybe we should take a little detour. You could tell us that. This is an adult channel.
I have this really, really wonderful person in my life who goes by servant. He's my submissive, and which is wonderfully ironic because he's a male dominant professionally, but he's submissive to women. And
might I say he is a very hunky, sexy dude.
He is. He's awesome. And he texted me this morning about 8 o'clock, and he said, "What are you doing about 9:30?" And I said, "I'm going to be in my office." And he came by, and he said he was hungry, so he just came by for a little while and visited. And
a little snack?
For a snack. He came by for a snack in my office.
I hope you were properly coiffed for this luncheon.
Yeah, I was. I was totally properly coiffed.
Now, are you Brazilian or a landing strip?
Yeah. I'm an old-fashioned, bushy kind of girl. I'm an old hippie, remember?
Oh, yeah. Man.
So my day started off quite pleasant. I have a cold, and so I was a little concerned about that, but it didn't get in the way of anything, actually, at all. So
awesome. Well, sex can be great for your sinuses and your immune system, so I would imagine you're feeling better.
I am feeling a lot better than I was this morning. So absolutely, sex is very good for the health. It's also good for the world. I think so, anyhow.
How so?
Well, I am the executive director of the Center for Sex Positive Culture, which is a nonprofit, 501c7 here in Seattle. And we also run the Foundation for Sex Positive Culture, which is a 501c3. We put on the Seattle Aquatic Art Festival, and we do events and for people in all forms of sexuality. And one of the things that I realized in working with all these amazing people, we have a space that's about 10,000 square feet, and we have literally some kind of social party event every day of the week. And so I get to meet a lot of really fascinating people whose lives have been transformed because they've stepped into sexuality without shame and with full self-expression. And one of the things that I'm really like determined to do is to change how we talk about sexuality. In my community, I'm part of the BDSM community, S&M, fetish, that type of stuff. And I'm also polyamorous, which means I have multiple partners. Many people in my community and outside my community call what we do alternative. And I truly do not believe what I do is alternative. I believe what I do is a form of normal human sexuality. The mainstream overculture, as you might have it, may consider it alternative, but the reality is it's just one of the many, many facets of such of the types of sexuality a human being can have. And or I do more than one of them. But so my mission is to remove the word alternative when we describe sex. If it's between two or more consenting people, I should say, then I don't see where why it should be called alternative. I think that diminishes it, it demeans it, it marginalizes us, and everything I do, I'm very proud and happy to do, and I don't ever want to consider what I do marginalized. So that's where my mission is, to change things.
Well, and of course, you and I know that we're very much on the same mission, but for the benefit of our listeners, I'd just say that I actually believe that this marginalizing of sex, period, of any kind of sex, you know, we've kind of put it over here like, oh, yeah, that's my sex life, as if it were something separate from life itself.
Yes.
I think it's ludicrous because without sex, there is no life. I think, how did people end up deciding that sex was separate from the rest of life when it is the only reason you're sucking air right now? Is somebody had sex, that's how you got here. And it's really, to me, just that plain. And then when I see how people, how tolerant people are of violent imagery. And, it's interesting. Recently, somebody got deeply offended because I posted a picture of two bonobos, which are, you know, ape-like creatures. They look like chimpanzees, but they're not. They're very peaceful, loving, gentle animals. A picture of them having missionary-style sex, which you think wouldn't offend anybody since I think that's the only position the Pope okays. And they were just, they thought it was totally inappropriate for children. And I'm thinking to myself, I'll tell you what I think is inappropriate for children, most of their video games. You know, because there's so much blood and gore in them. And the same thing with the books. The children's books can have all kinds of blood and gore, but don't you dare show even a passionate kiss, but especially not something that we would construe as being sexual, because that's going to damage the minds of our children. Then we wonder why they've grown up to be so violent and so inured to violence. I don't know if you saw the that murder that was just recently broadcast television, because somebody had recorded it on their cell phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and there was a woman just yesterday who she was a big issue because she brought a handgun to her daughter's soccer or sporting event and got in trouble for it. And that was like a year ago. And she was, and she said, well, I have to have a handgun for protection and I need to carry it. And she was like, oh, like, blah, blah, blah. She was shot yesterday by her husband, and the handgun that she had for protection was hanging in her backpack on the door.
Oh,
so
my
irony
God.
Of this woman proposing that, and I mean, I'm not for taking away guns, believe me, because we need guns for hunting, and I grew up in a hunting family and stuff. But I believe that there's a big irony when somebody who's a proponent of guns to protect herself dies from a gun, which is not that uncommon, sadly.
Well, I myself am a gun owner. I'm very much for gun owner rights, but I leave my gun at home. I don't take it to the park. I don't take it to the airport. I don't take it to the library. I don't take it on the train. I don't take it to Obama political rallies. And I don't understand why people are suddenly, like, all over the place with AK-47s, which I don't even own anything like that. It's like my right to bear arms. It's very strange to me that we live in a society that's so tolerant of violence. But, you know, guns themselves are not violent.
Yet so intolerant of sexuality.
I personally believe the way that sex can save the planet is because I think that people who are having a healthy, shame-free relationship with their sexuality are less violent.
I agree.
This is a great segue for you, because maybe you can explain to our listeners how it is that you think people who brand or beat or otherwise, you know, play pierce each other and do some things that we call blood sports, it looks like violence to a lot of people. How is it that you could say that isn't violence?
Because violence is non-consensual, and what we do is a very consensual, thought-out, well-considered acts of sexuality that may appear to somebody as even non-sexual, but believe me, as someone who is quite active in the S&M community, it's very sexual, very erotic. Our brain is constructed that our pain and pleasure centers are connected almost, they're side by side, and for some of us, we find erotic pleasure in receiving pain. And so that's what masochists do, and I'm definitely a masochist. But there's no violence involved, because violence is not well thought out, well, maybe by the perpetrator, but definitely not by the victim. And there's no victims involved when it's a consensual act between two or more consenting people. And
really?
So it has an appearance of, and it looks very different than maybe what you might think. But what the reality is, it's actually can be very loving and joyful. In fact, I spend much of my time when I'm doing activities, S&M activities, I spend much of my time laughing. And it's, for me, quite joyous.
I know. I've seen you in play spaces, and you do laugh. You laugh a lot. I think you laughed when I saw you get a little brand, and you laughed.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fun. We call it play. I mean, that's what one of the things that we call what we do. We call what we do play. And we call our implements that we play with toys. And we have toy bags, and we have play parties. And sure, I mean, some of it definitely isn't going to make me laugh, and that's okay too, because it's consenting between me and my partners, and it's thought out, and it's negotiated, and it's something that is not a haphazard act either, and it's definitely not violent. Yeah.
You know what I think is kind of interesting about even going down this road and asking these kinds of questions is that we have this assumption that we know that the difference between rape and consensual intercourse, let's say. How is it that, it's like, okay, you can't really, if two people were having sex and you were watching them, I mean, you could perhaps tell if there was absolutely no struggle at all, but you don't know that, because some people, when they're getting raped, I myself, as an incest survivor, have just gone completely limp and haven't resisted or fought in any way, shape, or form, because I just leave my body.
That's right.
So to an outside observer, it's possible that you wouldn't even be able to identify a rape, just visually by looking at it. And yet it's interesting that, you know, we know there's a difference between consensual sex and rape if it looks like vanilla, if it looks like vanilla sex, and we think we know the difference. And the definition...
And again, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the definition for any type of sexual behavior really has to be just about consent and not whether somebody else thinks a particular sex act is degrading or disgusting or not their cup of tea. You know, it's just a matter of, is the other person having a good time?
Is it? Yeah, that's right. Is it consensual? And that's really the bottom line. So I want to go back to something you were saying about children and sex and birth and childhood and that, because it's just kind of, it's very interesting. We just started a new series of salon discussions, forum discussions here at the center called Connecting the Dots, and it's sex-positive childbirth and child-rearing. And I have a wonderful friend who has started a whole series. She just had a new baby this summer, and she found out that, she discovered that being sex positive, being willing to do fisting and exploring female ejaculation made for a really, really easy delivery. So we're creating a whole series of conversations around childbirth and raising children in a sex positive home, how to help create boundaries and also make children safe but not make them shamed and create a shameful life for, because what happens when you're young is that's when the shame starts building. And, because you get told no and not and you can't and don't touch yourself and all that. So we're doing some really cool stuff with creating a sex positive family, basically is what that is. So I'm very excited about it. It's something very new.
There's something in the air, Alina, because everybody I'm talking to, it's like Annie Sprinkle just sent out something about nonviolent communication. She was actually hosting Scott Katamas, who I've had on my show. He teaches nonviolent communication. And then Jill Nagel, she was the editor of Whores and Other Feminists, which is a book that an anthology I wrote for years and years ago. She's also going towards the nonviolent and domestic violence. Basically about trying to make this world a less violent place. So we were online, we were like musing about what is it about these sex activists who are suddenly getting involved in the violent, you know, anti-violence movement, and we were saying it was probably a natural progression. And I think it's very interesting that you are working around the birth thing, because I started doing some shows about birth, and I am currently writing a chapter that's going to go into a book about orgasms as paintings. There's this beautiful artist, her name is Nikita Duncan. She's out of San Francisco, and she paints people's orgasms. And as a matter of fact,
ooh,
you know what? I should hook you up with her. She interviews you over the phone. She could paint your orgasm, Alina.
That would be awesome.
Oh, I think it would be. You would be a real challenge for her. I tried to get her to interview a bonobo and paint one of their orgasms too. I figure if Peter Gabriel can make music with the bonobos, why can't you interview one about an orgasm?
There you go.
But anyway, I am, this chapter that I'm writing, without, you know, giving the whole thing away, I'm really approaching the taboo topics about masturbation in vitro. You know, I actually mentioned this to a very, very sex-positive professor, and he didn't want to believe it. You know, and now Mary Roach is online showing the ultrasounds of the baby masturbating. I mean, you know, we got proof. And also that the you know, childbirth could create orgasmic response, which would create a more pleasant birth.
There's an amazing video called Orgasmic Birth that, if you haven't seen it, you should, and that's exactly what it's about. It's about having a birth that's ecstatic and orgasmic and having orgasm. Women have orgasms during birth, and they shut it down because it scares them.
Oh, you don't happen to know the URL for that, do you?
I do not, but if you go to tantricbirth.com, that's my friend's website, I'm pretty sure she's got the information on her website.
So find out about orgasmic birth on tantricbirth.com?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that she's got it on tantricbirth.com. So she's the one that turned me on to the...
Okay, I'm just putting that on Twitter. By the way, we need to check in with our listeners here. Now, I posted a question to them. I said, can sex save the world? What do you think and why? So Wesley Wheeler said, no, it would be inappropriate. And then he laughed. So I think he was trying to be funny. And then we have Lisa, if you're listening, I hope I'm not butchering your last name here. I think it's Rachelieu. It's a beautiful French name, but I think I'm chopping it up here. But Lisa says, no, we are too overpopulated, and only Jesus can save the world. He did say be fruitful and multiply, but we overtook that to the extreme, and it's lovemaking, not sex, the evil this world calls it sex. Why would you ask such a question? Are you trying to confuse the ones reaching out? And before I make my reply to Lisa, I just Mark Chernish came back and said, Lisa, you must be single. which okay. Well, we don't want to flame against
you. You have interesting listeners. This is interesting.
Oh yes, I do. I absolutely love this part of having a show is being able to get other people's feedback and see what they think. So here's what I'd like to say, Lisa, if you happen to be listening, and that is that our definition of sex is very narrow. I mean, you know, one of the first things you thought of is that sex creates overpopulation. And I agree that the way that people think they have to have sex, which is always procreative sex, we have so many taboos against gay sex, lesbian sex, bisexual sex. We have so many taboos against oral sex, masturbation, anal sex, and none of these things has to lead to creating a baby. And then there's Tantra. Tantra is a beautiful spiritual way to breathe into sex. You can do it fully clothed without a partner or with a partner. You don't ever even have to touch each other or get naked. And then, of course, BDSM really doesn't have to involve your genitals at all. So if we can broaden our definition of sex, that is one of the first steps in making our relationship to sex something that's healthy and that can save the world. Because I think if we were not so busy enforcing procreation, because that's really what we do, we enforce procreation and tell people that anything else is naughty or dirty or bad and that God may take offense. And that is what creates the overpopulation. And in fact, you know, when you've got somebody like the Pope saying that condoms don't work, it's also those kind of attitudes that create the spread of disease. What do you think, Alina?
I totally agree with you. I love it when you get on your soapbox. You're just so exciting. So.
Well, here's another comment we got from John Oliver Mason says, I don't know about saving the world, but I would love to have more intelligent discussion about sex. The right-wing fundamentalist nut jobs act like there must be no sex, and they hog the airwaves in public discourse.
That is a true statement. Well, and the thing is the way to save the world with sex also is to have a conversation, is to have intelligent conversations about sex. Changing the conversation of how people talk about sex, how people experience sex, how people view sex, all of those, all of that is about changing sexuality and changing the world. And it takes people like your writer who said we have to have intelligent, like your listener, we have to have intelligent discourse around this, which we sure don't most of the time. But I changed that. I'm changing that, and you are. And there's a lot of people like us out there, thank goodness.
No, there is. There totally is. Let's see. We've got Hercules of Pleasing Hands. It says, good question, Veronica. Sex or making love? When you make love, do you have sex? Could surely save the world if done with thought, understanding, and respect. Remembering the saying is, make love, not war. So What do you think, Alina, about the whole idea of making love versus having sex? What is that? Just somebody kind of saying, hey, you know, the way you do it looks like you're not making love, and the way I do it has a lot of soul and spirituality to it?
Well,
or do you think there is a distinction?
Here's the way I look at it is you don't have to love to have sex. And sex itself is when people use the word making love, are euphemisms for having sex? In my opinion, what they're doing is buying in again to this whole shame thing around sexuality. Because it's so shameful to talk about having sex that we're going to call it making love. You know, and when I have sex with people that I don't necessarily love, and the sex is good. I have sex with people I do love, and the sex is good. And the word making love is just an escape from confronting the fact that we're sexual beings and that we need to have a conversation that's open and honest. And sometimes you call a spade, and sex is sex.
And it's not bad.
You know, it's not a bad thing.
If we are masturbating in the womb to the point of orgasm, no less, it's not like our hands just accidentally wander down there. They're actually, you know, videotaping unborn children having orgasms. And the way that, you know, and again, let's define this term. There are some people who think an orgasm is what happens when a man ejaculates, and it's not. You know, obviously a male human can't ejaculate until they're, you know, well, usually like sometime around 12 or something like that, I think. Depends. I'm sure it varies. But it's not something that you're doing certainly when you're even 2 or 3. So it's not about the ejaculation. An orgasm is separate from that. And the reason we know that the fetuses are orgasming is because their hands are down on their genitals doing a back-and-forth motion, and then their whole body shudders, and they stop. So, yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Mm-hmm.
So,
hey, I gave a guy an orgasm the other day, and he didn't ejaculate.
Oh, yeah.
First time for him. He was very excited. It was his first non-ejaculatory orgasm he'd ever had that he remembered. It's very sexy.
Wonderful when a man can make that separation, because once a man figures that out, then he doesn't have to allow his sexual fulfillment to be attached to his erection or his virility. He can really open himself up to a lot of pleasure if he can stop conflating those two things. I think as long as men think ejaculation and orgasm are the same thing, they're still kind of in that whole performance mode. You know?
Well, we confuse orgasm, even women do, you know, that if it's not clitoral-based and that little tiny, like, intense flame that happens right on the clitoris, then it's not an orgasm. Where my body, I mean, I have so many different kinds of orgasms depending on what's being done to me or what I'm doing to myself. And sometimes they don't feel the same. And we confuse that. We confuse what orgasms are, I think, and make them... We make them mysterious. and they're not mysterious.
Oh, they can
babies
be.
Babies are doing it in the womb. But babies are doing it in the womb. You know?
I think orgasms can be anything
human.
You want. I think they can be just something like a sneeze to clear the cobwebs so you can think straight. I think they can be a mysterious portal into the divine and a window into God's mind. It's just entirely up to you what path you want to take with an orgasm. So I think they're open-ended. So here we got Hercules Pleasing Hands came to Lisa's defense here. P.S., gentlemen, Lisa is entitled to her opinion. Right or wrong, Veronica put this out there universally for everyone to answer. And by the way, there isn't any right or wrong here, and I think that's the whole point. If somebody has an opinion that there's one right way and, you know, the other ways are wrong, then I think that's a problem, because we're all so different here on planet Earth. Wesley Wheeler says, far too stoned for this conversation, but find it transfixing. Thank you, Wesley. I'm glad you're enjoying this. So, by the way, for our listeners who don't, well, if you have Twitter, my ID on Twitter is Veronica Monet. That's M-O-N-E-T. And you should be able to find that pretty easy. It's usually twitter.com/ Veronica Monet. And if you're my friend on Facebook, then, of course, we can play the kind of games we're playing here on my wall here, which is a lot of fun. But if you're not and you want to call in, our toll-free number is 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. Okay. So, Alina.
Yes.
What do you think about, do you see any connections between people's attitudes towards sex and world politics? What, how do you think our attitudes towards sex could be changed so that this would, the planet would be a better place to live? Or do you see any correlations there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you want to look at the most repressive regimes we have are the ones where sexuality is also repressed. You know, you look at, I mean, we look at some of the Middle Eastern countries where people are getting, you know, put to death and stoned for being sexual beings.
Right.
That's an example of some pretty disastrous world politics, you know, when a person cannot be the sexual being they are. We still, in our wonderful country, suffer under the don't ask, don't tell policy in our military. If you're gay or lesbian, you cannot be out. That's tragic, you know. So sexuality plays a big part of world politics. And I'm hoping to see the United States become a leader and move forward, but I still don't have a whole lot of I don't believe that the Democrats are any better than the Republicans when it comes to not being full of crap when it comes to sexuality. You know, there's so much. We live in a world where we condone, we may not accept it, but we condone cheating as something normal. How many of our politicians, Democrats and Republicans and whatever, have been caught having relationships outside of their agreements with their partners? Tons of.
You know, this is the thing that really just breaks my heart, that our value system is so focused on the appearance of good that we find ourselves having very little to do with the core of good. And when I use the word good, I'm talking about things that are life-affirming, positive, respectful of other people, respectful of other life forms, respectful of this planet. That, to me, is good because it embraces life and it doesn't run headlong into things that create death. And, and so we're talking about making love, right? And there's this assumption that, well, if you have a wedding ring between the two of you, then you would be making love. Or if you got pregnant, then you would be making love. And I think about all the people who do have wedding rings who are raping each other or otherwise abusing and hurting each other and probably not even aware of it because the form of their behavior conforms to the norms. It looks good. It looks normal. Go ahead. Yeah, jump in.
Well, I'm polyamorous. I have multiple partners, and yet the people are more disturbed by the fact that I dare to have relationships with multiple people than the fact that I have than people being, you know, cheating on their partners. People get upset. They get more upset at me for being polyamorous than they do about me being kinky. They think it's just, how can you love more than one person? I get that all the time. Cracks me up. Most of these are people with more than one child. But
I know. Yeah, Elena, it reminds me of when I was going on television as an escort. I got asked whether or not I paid my taxes. Well, I thought they would be delighted to know that, yes, I did. No, they were not. They were quite upset to find out that I was paying my taxes because what they wanted to have was a sense of who the good guys and bad guys are.
Uh-huh.
You know? And it was
we messed with that.
Yeah, if Uncle Sam is taking this prostitute's money, then Uncle Sam is a pimp. Oh, my God, I don't want to know about this. when I was talking to some college students about religious leaders that were clients of mine, you know, and I didn't mention any names because I like living, but, you know, I was saying, okay, well, you know, I have some famous religious leaders as clients, and it's pretty mind-blowing to see how self-righteous they can get and yet what their private behavior does. And there were some young men in the student body who were not worried or concerned to find out that there were religious leaders seeing me as a prostitute. They were completely upset that I might divulge their identity.
Really? Oh, that's funny.
These were some rowdy, drunken frat boys, but they were totally there to protect the patriarchal system and the whole idea that the men were united with each other against, you know, whoever the common foe was, which I guess is exposing the secrets of, you know, the dominant culture.
Yeah, they don't like secrets given out. It bothers them a lot.
I think that's one of the problems with polyamory, Elena, is because the secret is out. Instead of you having the decency to keep your affairs to yourself, you're putting it all out there.
I'm letting other people know just how sexual I am, and my relationships. I mean, I love the people in my poly world. These are not, you know, well, I do have casual sex. These particular ones are not casual sex. These are people that I'm very much attached to. They're in my life, will be in my life probably forever. And yet people still find it disgusting or just too hard for them to wrap their head around how I could have more than one person that I love and that I want to be with. I find it very humorous, actually. But,
kind of sad. I find it really sad because I see the limitations of people's love. It seems to me like, and I personally want to live in a world where we can be polyamorous or monogamous and move in and out of those things. You know, I think there's times when people just want to be with one person. I think there's times when people want to be completely by themselves. And I think there's times when people would really like to have an extended family, which polyamory can really just provide so many resources. You know, when you were talking about it takes a village to raise children, well, that's exactly what polyamory gives, a village.
It's children raised in a poly household are so blessed and loved and lucky. It's just so incredible. And yet there's still parts of the country where people that are polyamorous can lose their children for being poly. You know, they have their kids taken away from them because they have more than one loving partner. And that's pretty tragic, really, when you think about it. But again, you know, we just got to keep working at them and changing it one person at a time. I'm doing it.
Now you're actually the godmother for a little girl, right?
I'm the godmother, and also I'm. My girlfriend Jennifer is going to be having a little boy here, in a couple months, I'm so excited. I'm going to be a goddess mother again for one of my partner's children. She's like popping on into November, 1st of December. We're very excited,
you know, something else that would be interesting for people to know about, you know, having polyamory means many loves. And when I mention that name, people oftentimes will think, oh, it's like swinging. It's just about having these big orgies. And it's not that. You actually have some people that you consider to be part of your poly family that you're not even having sex with anymore, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, sex is a part of it, definitely. But some of my partners and I have loving relationships that aren't about the sex. They're about the relationship. And I look at I like the love, my love for people, is it doesn't just go away because the relationship changes or alters. My former husband and I will always have a relationship, I mean, no matter what. And he's not an ex, he's a former, in that we will continue to be in some kind he's part of my poly household, I guess is the best way to put it, because he's somebody that I love dearly. We're just not married anymore. And we have a mistaken notion that when you end a relationship or, you know, get a divorce or split up or whatever you want to call it, that means you have to erase all the past. You have to erase all the love. Because, you know, you've wasted all those years on that person and they were bad or wrong. And it doesn't have to be that way. It's just things change. Life changes on you. And we have to accept that.
And especially now that humans are living longer and longer.
Oh, God, yes. You know, yeah. my grandfather, my step-grandfather lived to be over 100 years old. And my step-grandmother, my grandma, she's just this awesome woman. She was 12 years younger than him. So when she was 88 when he died. And her 90th birthday, she's visiting my little sister, and she's talking to my brother-in-law. And she told my brother-in-law, she says, you know, and she mentioned my grandpa, she says, grandpa was a really good provider, but he was a lousy husband. Now, grandma and grandpa were married for 69 and a half years.
Wow.
And I know what she meant by lousy husband. They didn't sleep in the same bedroom for the whole year, all the time I knew them, for 50 years, 50 plus
wow.
years. I doubt they probably had sex once Laverl was, whoops, my stepmother was, I don't think she's listening anyhow.
I really doubt it.
But I really can say that I don't think that they ever had sex again. So just imagine living in a world where you spent 69 years in a passionless marriage. Because
yeah.
that's what society expected of you. That's the way it was
yeah.
supposed to be.
It is tragic, and I think about the a lot of the men who came to see me when I was working as an escort who loved their wives, did not want to have a love relationship with another human being, but their wives were, you know, disabled and incapable of having sex, and so coming to pay somebody for sex for them, and hopefully it was somebody who was very loving and personal, which is how I worked. You know, I developed long-term relationships with people, very, very stable relationships, which again flies into all the stereotypes about the sex industry as well. It's like,
yeah.
what? They're talking about relationships? But it was, you know, in a lot of ways, it enabled them to preserve what they wanted to preserve in the way of their marriage. So they're
yeah.
able to, and the only unfortunate part about it to me is all the people out there lying about what they're doing. And, you know, I think this culture accepts lying to such a degree that people have forgotten what it is about lying that hurts. You know, it's not because lying is quote-unquote wrong. That's not what the problem is. Lying erodes your self-esteem so that every time the people in your life say, "We love you," your subconscious is always thinking, even if you're not thinking this consciously, your subconscious is always thinking, well, you only love me because you don't know the truth about me.
Yeah.
And so on some level, you just erode your own self-esteem, and you drive a wedge between you and the people that you really want to count on and be intimate with. You know, and if your expectations about a relationship surpass just sharing the rent, you know, then intimacy is a really important thing. And one of the things I admire so much about the polyamorous community is all the workshops they take about negotiation, honesty, communication, problem solving. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
amazing.
Yeah, there's, you know, we are great communicators. And in fact, there's a joke in the poly world, the difference between swingers and polyamorous people is swingers have sex, poly people just talk about it. Because we're constantly negotiating and figuring things out, but it's not really
yes.
true. We're, but,
But we have a a similar joke about sex educators that we mostly just teach sex, but we don't have any.
Well, you know, there was a time when I could say when I was doing a lot of sex education, that was true. But lately, life's taken a better turn for me. I've been really busy.
Well, okay, so I want to throw this one your way, Alena, because I think this comment was about the last thing I mentioned here. I said, if we enlarge our definition of sex to include gay, lesbian, oral, masturbation, BDSM, and tantra, then overpopulation is not a problem. Wesley Wheeler comes back and he says, you are a paradox. Ouch.
Ouch.
So do you often get that response that if you mention BDSM, people are kind of like, well, you know, how? Because he thinks it's paradoxical that I'm talking about saving the planet and BDSM in the same breath. I'm assuming. I don't know that, Wesley. I'm just going by brief.
I'm always amazed when people get all freaky about it. But like I said, people are more freaky about the fact that I'm polyamorous than the fact that I'm kinky, you know. It's a very kind of odd little, it's very strange. I just find the whole thing just kind of strange. And I love it. It gives me opportunity to have great conversations with people. And here's the other thing that, and I bet you find this too. When I meet people on the street, I'm very open and honest about who I am and what I do in this world. Extremely so. And, but I find that more comfortable I am with talking to the person in question, the less likely they are to have issues with who I am. It's
right.
When I find myself feeling uncomfortable, and it's funny, it's usually when it's involving maybe somebody like a little old lady or something where I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to mess with her sensibilities, which is very stupid on my part when I do that. That's very funny. But usually those are the times when people respond negatively. But if I'm just very matter-of-fact about, yeah, this is what I am and who I am and what I do. For the most part, do not get all up in arms about what I do. They may look at me and say, well, that's kind of odd. I really believe that the more comfortable we are with being out about who we are, the more people are going to accept and understand and figure out that all of these kinds of sexuality are valid and sex positivity is that's the thing that I really want to get people to learn about is, you know, that sex in all its forms, whether it's for procreation and spirituality and love and recreation and tantra or whatever, it's healthy and life-affirming. That's what sex
is about.
It
absolutely is. And, you know, we have another comment here from Adam Sawyer. Adam, I apologize. I'm not going to be able to read your whole comment because it's rather long, but I love the first sentence here. It says, sure. It can. Speaking back to where I said, could sex save the world? He says, sure, it can, if we all fuck at the same time and the world heals itself while we are busy. and that's funny. That's funny, but it brings up a common, I think, misconception about how sex could save the world. People do think a lot of times, well, we'll be so busy making love, we won't have time to make war. And, you know, that's like a really small portion of my message, because I'm not so much saying that you should have sex to save the world as I'm saying the healing, our attitude towards sex could save the world.
Amen.
So if you want to be abstinent, that's perfectly okay with me. I say more power to you. As a matter of fact, I teach people how to be abstinent, just as I also teach them how to be sluts. Because as a sexologist, I'm all about choice. I want you to be coming from an empowered place where you've completely embraced your sexual bill of rights, and everything you do is from a position of, this is exactly what's in integrity with who I am today. Not yesterday, not tomorrow, today. Because I think our sexuality is always in flux, and you may be feeling, you know, kind of straight 1 year and kind of gay the next. I say go with it. Stop hanging labels on yourself and trying to box yourself in to a concept about who you think you are. But this shame that we have about sex is what I really think is destroying the planet. And some really tangible examples of it were too ashamed about sex to carry a condom on a date. So if I have a condom, it means I'm a slut. So, oops, I accidentally got pregnant. Well, I'm too ashamed to, you know, do anything except get married to somebody that I don't love and raise a child in a home that's not loving. And then, you know, we're too ashamed to be gay or too ashamed to accept people who are gay. So then some gay people wind up getting married and trying to pass as straight because they're trying so hard to do the thing that society says they should do. And that shame creates a lot of pain and unhappy marriages and, you know, sexless bedrooms. And I personally would love to see us say gay is the new green because, you know, when you put a bunch of rats in a box in a small, they go gay. I think it's nature. It's nature's way of trying to slow down the overpopulation. And here we are getting in the way of all these beautiful things, whether it's Tantra or BDSM or masturbation or gay and lesbian sexual behavior. We get in the way of that with our religious and moral taboos, which have absolutely nothing to do with the quality of adult people's lives.
Yep, absolutely. I agree with you completely on that.
Well, that's it. You know, of course, I'm not going to get argued. That's why we got Facebook here, because we we like you guys to argue with us a little bit, throw something out there that's not on board for this, because it makes it much more interesting than Aline and I just sitting here jerking each other off.
Because we agree on pretty much everything. So.
We do. And we don't agree with the rest of our family.
That's right. Considering the family that we grew up in and the fact that we turned out the way we did, I find that just wonderfully delightful that we've taken similar paths in the world. And so, you know, for all you fundamentalists out there who listen to us and are all upset and stuff, remember that fundamentalism is what has created Veronica and I.
Oh, yes.
So think about it. Because
we are, as I always like to say, the religious right has created more horrors than anybody else.
Amen.
Amen, sister.
That is so true.
Amen. When I go to the international conferences on prostitution, they're all from religious rights homes.
I have a lot of my co-workers and people that are involved in the sex positive community here in Seattle are from religious right homes.
Yeah.
A lot of them. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's not just an act of rebellion. I think it's really more an act of disillusionment because the hypocrisy of people who go to church and then come home and sexually abuse their children or you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I think what it is also is
that we're, you know, those of us who have made the conscious choice to leave the church in our religious upbringings, if you tested us, you would find that we're all probably a little bit smarter than the average bear too. That, you know,
well, I know that applies to you, Alina, but you're in Mensa.
No, we're all pretty darn bright, and that has a. You know, we're people that we think for ourselves, which is what I end up when I see people that are stuck in their religious bullcrap. It's because they don't think for themselves. They allow someone else to do the thinking.
No,
and
it's true.
Not, you know, yeah.
It's true. And speaking of which, our cousin, Dr. Matthew Piercy from Indiana University, failed to show up today. But we will get him next time.
Cool.
He's actually done some phenomenal research about gay men married to straight women and the impact that it has on the straight women. I said really compassionate research. I was really impressed.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our
little kinky cousin corner of the world is getting bigger and bigger.
Yep.
And we are running out of time, my dear. So we probably better sign off. Tell folks how they can find out about the center so that they can come see the proper way to handle a crop and meet your beautiful sunny face.
If you go to www.sexpositiveculture.org, you will find all you want to know about the organization. And if you go to Seattle Erotic, that's with two E's, .org, you'll find out about our Seattle Erotic Art Festival that we have every year, which is a world-class event. We hold it at the Seattle Center, which is a city-owned piece of property. That in itself is a big thing. You just got to think about how cool that is. So,
it really is.
Taken here in Seattle.
Are you, you've got public office in Seattle right now, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm a commissioner for... I'm on the Commission for Sexual Minorities, so I'm a commissioner also in the city for the
city. Are you going to be running for any offices? You know, in case we have some Seattle listeners and we want them to vote the right way.
In a couple years, give me some time. I keep saying this, but right now I'm dealing with being a commissioner and running my organization, and I got a chance to meet one of the new mayoral candidates yesterday, and and that was really pretty fascinating and interesting. I'm involved in politics too.
Awesome.
And I'm pretty out about that.
Well, Alina Gabash, folks, my cousin, somebody I'm very, very proud to be related to. Honey, thank you for joining me today in the Shame Free Zone, and I hope to see you for Thanksgiving.
Oh, I hope to see you at Thanksgiving too.
Okay, I love
Thanks for having me on. I love you too. Bye, hon.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian.